This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
John Rittman, how'd you like to be the first to do it? He's the first ever softball coach at Clemson. He'll join us at 8:45 this morning.
They're excited about that.
They ought to be. They got a great ballpark.
Right there beside the baseball stadium.
Yeah, over the left field wall, right?
I used to hit, you know what?
Oh, no.
I'll tell you a story. Where the softball stadium currently is.
Don't you want to tell John this?
I'm just going to tell you. Right. We may get to it. We may not.
All right.
My freshman year at Clemson.
Sure.
That's where I hit golf balls. Where that field is right now.
Did you really?
Yeah. That used to be nothing more than a place for a football game. They parked cars there.
Sure. Oh, I remember that. Used to be media parking.
Yeah. Slam. So that used to be where we used to hit little 7-irons, 9-irons, 160 yards, boom, boom, boom. That was the spot. Now, it's a softball field.
Yeah, so.
Progress, West Durham. That's what it's called. Dan Radakovich getting it done.
Mark Packer Field at Clemson softball.
No. Mm-mm.
Just checking.
We have a lot of guests, though, this hour, which is good.
By the way, only one game on the card last night on the men's side, and Florida State won at home again.
They have won 60 of their last 63 at home. Is that crazy how good they've been?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Nobody on the planet's better than Florida State right now at their place.
18 in a row, fifth longest streak at home in Division I. Only ACC team still unbeaten at home, 65-59 the final. Tell you what, really impressed with the Charlotte freshman Patrick Williams last night.
He was good.
Nice perimeter game, tough around the basket. Koprivica, Olenichuk also helping out inside. Devin Vassell, not a great night, to be honest with you. Coming off the show he put on in Blacksburg Saturday.
But Wes, that's why Florida State's so good. Because
I agree with you.
Devin Vassell may light you up like a Christmas tree in one game, and guess what? The next one, he doesn't have to go off. There's somebody else always for Florida State that's going to step up and make plays.
I want to tell you.
We talked about depth with the big three. That's totally the difference.
There's Patrick Williams stroking it out of the corner. Raekwon Gray, by the way, there's the other corner for Williams just to make sure he's got him covered. Raekwon Gray, by the way, who at one point in his early years at Tallahassee was about 295 pounds on a 6'7", 6'6 frame, has slimmed it down to right about 260, and he is a handful on the bounce going in the lane now.
They're so athletic, man. Florida State is a nightmare on the defensive end, too. Roy Williams said this may be Florida State's best team since he's been in Chapel Hill. He may be right.
Well,
he may be right.
I'm going to tell you this. They came in the league with Sam Cassell, Bobby Surra, Rodney Dobard, and Doug Edwards.
By the way, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
And this team, top to bottom, might be right there. Now, they won the ACC tournament with Michael Snare and that crowd. But I'm not sure that team, A, was as deep, B, is as versatile at both ends of the floor. That was a more defensive-driven team, I thought, with a great score in Snare, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is a team that is gifted at both ends of the floor.
Much more balanced.
And deep. Now, I'm going to need longtime Florida State observers. We have to get Gino on here one day. Maybe talk about Doug Edwards and Sam Cassell and Rodney Dobard and
Pat Kennedy's teams. Yeah, but the Cassell teams, the era was different. In fact, there was a don't know what year it was, but the game was on yesterday when I woke up one time with my eye open, and the Florida State-North Carolina game was on. It might have been like 04. It's on one of the ESPN channels. Mm-hmm. And
is that the one in the tournament at the Georgia Dome?
No. This was the game in Tallahassee where North Carolina was up 24. Mike Patrick was calling the game. Vital was doing it. And the Noles were up 20. North Carolina was up 24, and Florida State came back, tied it at the buzzer, and then blew them out in overtime. But, again, you try to look. They did a throwback to Cassell back in the 90s.
Wine and cheese.
And when you watch the basketball highlights or the game 90s or early of this century.
It's not this game.
Totally different.
It's not even
the same universe. Mm-hmm. But this team is really, really good, Florida State.
Carolina played, by the way, without Brandon Robinson last night. Leg injury that he suffered late in the ballgame against Boston College. Now, I'm not Doug Halverson, the Carolina basketball trainer, or anybody affiliated with him. Dick Vitale and Sean McDonough used the term couple weeks last night.
I heard that.
To describe Brandon Robinson. If that's the case, then I wouldn't look for him certainly Saturday night.
And that's a huge
when they host Duke.
Problem. Because somebody's got to make shots.
By the way,
Cole Anthony's going to take a bunch of them, but somebody's going to start making some of them.
Right. Carolina 31% last night, second worst field goal percentage of the season. Behind their effort in the ACC Big Ten Challenge against Ohio State.
But you know what? That's all fine and good, but they've not had a good shooting year. That Florida State defense, dude, I'm telling you what, they are nasty.
And see, that's the part about Virginia, Duke, Florida State, and Louisville. Might not stroke it every night, but they guard you.
By the way, real quick, that 0-4 game yesterday I had with one eye open, Leonard Hamilton. Today
looks better.
Looks 15 years younger than he did in 2004.
Yeah, better coaching.
He's unbelievable.
Better players.
Leonard Hamilton, man. Look at him. He is slick, isn't he?
It's a home game, so he's wearing a tie. Remember, yeah. He told us on this show, no ties on the road because my shirts get wrinkled. I'm not crazy about, you know, the way they iron. So he goes, typically goes either open collared shirt or even the he's a man that keeps a mock alive.
I love it.
By the way, it was good to see his wife, Claudette, get some run last night late in the broadcast.
Yeah.
About time we started to see the
better half
of that operation. You know we always say that because we love you, Coach.
He knows it. All right. He knows we love him.
Now, Florida State, Louisville, and Duke. If I make you pick today, you're going to seat them. You're going to seat them.
Not based on what I think they're going to do, but as of today?
Today. On the line, you are Mark Brackets.
All right.
I cannot wait for Lenardi to appear on this show. Is that going to happen, or do we have to do some sort of separate agreement?
I think all of them are twos right now.
All of them are twos.
All are twos.
Across the board.
Across the board.
One goes west, one stays home.
Boy, today. Now this
committee will take some heat if they keep Duke south or east as a two.
Well, I mean, we still have 5 weeks of craziness in front of us. But today I think all of them are two seeds.
Okay. All right.
It would not surprise me, though, Wes, to crystal ball the NCAA tournament, and I think the ACC will have one seed. How about that? How about that as a tease?
Well, because Kansas and Baylor. If you sweat this thing out, Kansas or Baylor.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Kansas or Baylor?
Yep.
So somebody's not going to get a one
seed.
Well,
I mean, you know, Baylor's been so good and have so many great quality wins, especially on the road. How much emphasis are they going to give San Diego State with their strength of schedule?
There we go.
That, to me, would be one thing to look at. The Zags, I had an interview with Mark Few on Friday. Another injury. They got to get healthy too.
Yeah, Killian Tilly had an ankle injury.
Right, and he wasn't sure at the time because it happened on Thursday. I talked to him Friday. They barely got by San Francisco on Saturday.
Well, Bill Cartwright plays for San Francisco. Yeah. I mean, that's tough.
But that was a fist fight now, but they are really good.
Cartwright's good.
So it would not surprise me at the end of the day, we get into the tournament, that you're going to have Baylor, Kansas, Gonzaga, and an ACC team, the top four.
I'm going to say San Diego. San Diego State, if they have a zero there, San Diego State will be a one seed.
But, you know, Wes, you got to beat people.
I understand that, Mark, but a zero.
I don't hear about
Kansas
it.
May have another loss.
Well, they may have.
Baylor may have another loss.
They have played a good league.
So, San Diego State undefeated will be given a one.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if they get see if they get there with a zero.
Here's where I think it gets tricky for the ACC. If Gonzaga and San Diego State end up as one seeds, one of them is getting shipped here, where potentially Duke or Louisville is the two.
Well, it would be San Diego State.
I understand that. They're going to ship San Diego State east as the one seed and make Duke or Louisville the two. Or even Florida State,
whatever.
Whoever is the two in the East will essentially be 1A or 1B behind San Diego State, depending on how you want to look at it.
I think today the three ACC power teams
are
all two seeds. I do think an ACC team will end up as a one seed. We'll see. All speculation on February the 4th. We got a lot of big games left between now and Selection Sunday.
By the way, the only other ACC team receiving votes, there's only one, is Virginia.
Yep.
That's it.
It's been a weird year.
It's the poll. It's not the net. Right. And Pac's head hurts when we go to the net. But if we were to start looking at those type dynamics, and remember, I'm telling you all this, we're getting into this week, because Saturday at halftime on the rights holder of the NCAA tournament, they're going to reveal the top 16.
Do you like that idea, by the way?
No.
I think
because it was influenced by the college football playoff.
No doubt. There's no question about
that. I told
you
that 3 years ago, back before we ever started the old radio show.
No question about it.
It was completely influenced by the college football playoff.
Right. They saw the influence of the college football playoff rankings on ESPN, and they went, wow, look at all the interest in this. Maybe we should do this.
You're telling me 5 weeks before you pick it.
Right. Totally agree with that. So one of the other networks decided, let's steal that idea, and it just doesn't quite work the same.
And let me say this. This is Dr. Kevin White. Has been great to us and a great supporter of the network, and been very kind with his time and joined us. And I have no issues whatsoever with doing it. He happens to be the chair of the men's basketball selection committee this year. Okay. I don't like it. I don't think it's necessary. I think it's kind of ridiculous in some respects, to be honest with you.
Well, it wouldn't be ridiculous if they did it every week.
There you go.
The problem is they give you this little tease where you get a sample and you say, okay, great. Now I'm starting to get interested in college hoops, because I really do think the vast array of America doesn't get dialed into college hoops until the Super Bowl is over with, and that's kind of where we find ourselves now. But if they gave you the 16, Wes, this Saturday, and maybe it's every other week, but you can't just give it to me in the middle of February this
whatever. 5 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, so much is going to change that you're like, well, okay, great, whatever. Whatever.
Might as well release ours.
Why not? Well, I just did. I told you the three ACC teams are going to be two seeds.
Well, release our 16. Top four in each bracket.
If you want.
Do it Monday. We'll show you all.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? Three ACCs or twos? You agree with that or not?
I would say this. I think you're going to get a two. I think you're going to get two twos and a three.
Okay. Who's the three?
I don't know that. That part I don't know.
Well, you have to know. You just told me two twos and a three.
I would say at this point the tournament winner is a two.
No, I mean today.
Oh, today?
Today
I would make Louisville a two, Florida State a three, and Duke a two. It'd be Louisville, Duke, Florida State.
All right.
Two twos and a three would be Florida State.
Okay. We'll see where it goes. That'll be worth keeping an eye on this week.
If they get a one, it's going to be because there'll be a little bit of a separation in the top three somehow. That would be my opinion based on what we have seen so far.
Well, I will tell you this. When we get to the ACC tournament and we are all going to assume the combination of Duke, Florida State, and Louisville are going to be 1-2-3, there's going to be – whoever's the 2-3,
right.
You're going to have to win two. Again, we're talking about chalk here, right?
Right.
We're just going to assume there's chalk. And let's just say
it doesn't happen much.
Yeah, it doesn't happen. Very seldom is – right, seldom. But whoever the 2-3 – has the opportunity to go back-to-back possible humongous wins to not only a championship,
right,
but also the fact from a resume standpoint, you know, whatever the combination is. I mean, that would be two unbelievable W's back-to-back nights.
Yep.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
All right, we got over and under. I refuse to look at these. I want to hear them live.
Okay. I just scan them for topic lines to tease going to break. By the way, Tony Bennett with us at the bottom of the hour. So let's get the boys on camera. The public demands Josh Macri and Drew Brooks appear on this show, and we are happy to oblige. Mr. Macri on the left, Mr. Brooks on the right. By the way, did you like the Arizona State mention in Virginia's resume building earlier, Brooks?
Listen, I'm rooting for the ACC, but if Arizona State is your best non-conference win, then it hasn't been a great season.
All right, before we get to over and under, can we get a list, a roll call in the back row today?
Today we have Mike, John, Lewis.
There we are.
Okay,
we got LJ in the back bunker. We got Ezzy in the radio bunker.
Who's the lensman today?
Lensman.
Tim is the lensman.
Tim is the lensman. All right, very good. It's time for over and under. Let's do it.
All right, guys. First one, over under 70 points in any game for Virginia this season. Keep in mind, they've scored a high of 65 points. They've done that four times this year.
Under. Under.
I don't really see a transition chance in the remaining games, in the remaining 10 for the Cavaliers.
They're just not built for 70.
Well, but I don't see anybody that's going to force them to score 70 either to win. So,
in fact, that game Wednesday, given the fact the Tigers had put a 44 on the Deeks over the weekend, that game could really be low. But, no, man, hey, Virginia's not built for plus 70. That's okay. They've won a gazillion games not scoring 70.
Duke may score 85. I don't know if Virginia can get there that night. Virginia Tech shooting threes. They had 39 the first time they played, right? Something like that. Some crazy number low. Virginia Tech scored 39 points. Yeah. So I say under for sure there, Josh.
Okay. Very good.
Easy satisfaction on that one, Pac.
Apparently. Yeah, I really have nothing to add to that. So in the meantime,
let's look at Kihei Clark going in against the Orange on opening night.
That's it.
Over under three shirts that Pac's already gone through.
Oh, we're going over. We're over.
That was over at 5 a.m.?
We're going over on costume changes for Cher here today. We're going over.
That was, at 5 a.m., you'd have lost at 3. Stunning.
By the way, he hadn't sang Ain't No Mountain High Enough yet either.
Not going there to either. There's not enough bourbon in Charlotte for me to sing that song.
Next question. Over under 15, Duke's scoring margin in ACC play this season. Right now, their margin is 16.4.
I'm going to go under here. I think these games will get a little closer going down the stretch, especially the one Monday. A Virginia game in there. I'm going to go under. 16-4 is the number right now there, big fella.
16-4. All right, I'm going to go under 2 because I do think, again, Florida State game, I can't wait to see that game. That is just going to be a blast. I'll go under as well on that one.
Okay.
Even I was really impressed with Duke Saturday at Syracuse. They responded, great crowd.
There's your man.
There's my man right there. Goodness gracious. I'm telling you what, it's worth watching that dude just by yourself, man. He's going to take off from the top of the key and hurt somebody. He is unbelievable.
What did you say last week? He dunks it with his knees?
Dunks it with his knees. Stanley's my man now. He's my favorite player in the league.
Yeah, I'm well aware.
He is my favorite player in the league.
All right.
I tell you what, when he steals one and it's at midcourt, you might as well just get out of your chair and hope you're not going to land on something sharp. Because he is ridiculous. He does stuff like, if you got a Nerf hoop at home, that's what he does in real life, man. What you do with a Nerf, that's what he's doing.
The old Nerf hoops.
Oh, yeah, I love that guy.
I don't know. I got to watch Ismail Muhammad for 4 years.
He was a good dude now. Yeah. But Stanley's ridiculous.
All right, next.
Stanley, friend of the show, by the way.
Yeah, Cassius Stanley's been on this show, but this was before apparently he was dunking with his knees.
True. Next one, over under 1. Women's basketball team in the ACC that finishes the regular season undefeated at home. For reference, Louisville, NC State, and the Hokies all unbeaten this far.
I think we will end up with 1 undefeated team at home. Is that a push? Is that how you're going to play that one? Because I think 1 is the number.
I'll have to ask Mr. Brooks.
I know one thing. February 13th, man, circle it.
Going to be big.
February 13th is going to be a big game. And yes, NC State, you can have nice things. So go win one. I mean, I'm just telling you, that is going to be a monster game.
Yeah. Kenny Brooks done a really good job. And not getting nearly enough credit, at least when you start to think about nationally. NC State, Louisville, yeah, let's go 1. I'll go 1.
You hate 2. To do a push, but I think 1's the number.
All right, just for competitive nature, I'll say over. I'll say over. And who knows? I mean, Virginia Tech beat NC State. That's their home game, right? Yeah.
It'll be good, man.
All right. God, women.
Thank you for avoiding the double push, yeah.
Top of the card, by the way, in women's basketball is and men, by the way, is really good.
The guys despise the double push.
I know they do.
Nothing worse than the double
push.
You
know what, though? That is a tribute to you guys for throwing the dart right in the middle of the bullseye, because 1 is absolutely the right number.
No, we just make it up. We should have done 1.5.
There you go. Under.
Yeah, so, all right. Bad on us.
Move along, Macri.
Avoid the double push on this one. Over under 23 combined touchdowns, passing and rushing, for Chase Bryce at Duke next season. We set the number there because that's what Quentin Harris did last year for Duke.
Over. Well, yeah. I think this is over because you just heard us talk about number one. We forgot Jack Wolobol, by the way, the center that got hurt who comes back, Pack. So they actually have five offensive linemen back who have five or more starts. Now, Taylor's filled in at center, but Wolobol could be back at the pivot next year. Plus the receivers, five of the top six receivers are back. I don't see any way this is not a win. By the way, he could throw for 23 in their first three games. They have Middle Tennessee State at home.
They ease into 2020. There's no doubt.
Mighty Elon.
Ooh.
And then
there's a dozen there.
Thursday night against Will Healy and the Charlotte 49ers. Now, a dozen.
The schedule.
Trisciani, by the way, had the Mighty Phoenix defense ready
to
go.
But when we did the schedule release, the one thing I think my comment to you was, I think Duke has the easiest ease into the 2020 than any team in the league.
Five of the first seven at home.
Yeah. Chase Bryce is going to throw it downfield, and David Cutcliffe, again, I think it's a perfect fit for all parties.
The question I have, in all honesty, is who's going to catch it? Who's going to be the guy that develops? The TJ Ramming, if you will, the Jamison Crowder of this Blue Devil team that is the every snap threat in the throw game. I just never thought Duke got around to that last year. I thought Dave brought up an interesting point about Noah Gray too. So, all right.
All right, guys, couple more here. Over under four teams in the conference that finish the regular season with 20 or more wins. Men's basketball side, we're talking.
Over. You got 2 at 18, 1 at 19 right now. Virginia, Syracuse, NC State, Pittsburgh, Virginia Tech all have 14. Syracuse has 13. Over. Four or more, yes. Over.
Again, I think the boys have done a nice job throwing the dart right on the bullseye because I think the number is four.
Going over. You can take the push.
I'll take the push.
You can take the push money.
This is a tip of the hat to the Masters in Bristol because I think the number's right on the money. I do.
What, Macri, not going to talk about Pack on the fence today?
I mean, if you want to go, I mean, flip a coin on that. I mean, I'll stay positive and go over, but I think four is the number. That makes you guys happy.
We're getting nothing.
It's quiet.
In response.
Crickets back in Bristol.
He's not feeling well. We'll let it go.
All right. Usually he gets told make a decision. Durham gets told make a decision.
Yeah.
All right,
go
ahead.
Maybe get sick next time. Over under 90, the percentage of voters who put Vernon Carey on their first team all conference ballot. Not sure if you're a voter, Wes, but I have a feeling where you go here.
I am, and it's over. Again, I will preface one more time by saying I did last week on positions. I just happened to choose John Mooney because he's second in the country in double doubles.
I picked Vernon Carey because he is a first-team All-ACC.
Yeah, he's going to be All-ACC first-team. In fact, I think he and John Mooney both are going to make it. But Vernon Carey will clear more than 90%. Absolutely. In fact, as a result of him being player and rookie of the week, they're those sharp grays I like. Of him being player and rookie of the week, I think Vernon Carey and Dick Vitale mentioned this last night. I think he's got a chance to be the ACC player of the year.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Wes, yesterday after our show, we had a chance to hook up with Tony Bennett.
Yep.
And we asked him point blank, how important was it not to play this past weekend?
Well, I mean, you don't know when you're going to get that bye at the start of the year, obviously, or whenever the schedule comes out. So you just make the most of it. And with a team like ours, you know, we just keep working on the rest balance with, okay, some extra work and trying to fine tune. We're coming off of, a real good win against a high quality Florida State team and a hard fought win the game before against Wake Forest. So try to capitalize on that momentum and then fine tune and get as ready as you can. And as I said, balance the rest. So again, it's just, one of those wherever your bye week or whatever you want to call it, where it falls, you make the most of it. And, you know, for us right at the midway point, we'll hopefully use it, and we got some really high-level games coming up.
I tell you what, Coach, I'll be the guy on the other shoulder. Would you have rather played? How's that?
You know, it's funny you ask that. You can look at it. We had a couple guys who were banged up. We were without, you know, or we were without Cody Statman. So mm-hmm. there's time for certain guys to heal. But when you feel like you're getting a little momentum, there's nothing wrong with continuing to play and play as many as you can every day. So, and then when it's not going well. But this year, you know, it's more just are we right when that ball's tipped, whether you have a bye week or you're playing, you know, three games in 7 days and all that. So, there is something with momentum and playing, but it's so much about, you know, we had some good time this week to prepare. And again, Clemson got two more days and Clemson's coming in on Wednesday.
All right. I want to go to something Mark and I talked about yesterday. And I think that's the marked improvement of Mamadi Diakite and a lot of things, right? But I got to wonder if the old coach kind of cringes when he drifts to the 3-point line and starts knocking them down, because that looks a little bit out of his comfort zone. And I got to believe it might be a little bit out of yours at times.
Well, you've misspoken once again. No, I'm okay. You know, Mamadi can shoot the ball. He really can. He's worked hard on that and to advance his range. And as long as that doesn't become the only thing you do and you don't define it, but Mamadi, you know, has hit some big shots for us. He was very, obviously very good against Florida State. And I'm comfortable with him, again, as long as he's balanced with can he, you know, attack, get on the glass, do all the things that make Mamadi the good player he is. And I think he's added more of that and is one of our, you know, we haven't shot the ball well this year, but he's, you know, at times been one of our bright spots with that shot at crucial times in games. So, and as long as that's not all he does, I think it's good for us. And we're running things a little different this year. And so I'm okay with it, contrary to what you think.
Coach, it's been a weird year nationwide, much less just in the ACC, about injuries. And, you know, it's one thing to say, listen, we lose player A or player B, but it's also a factor when it comes to practice. And, you know, you get into early February. We had Jim Christian on the show yesterday. And he talked about the fact you got to be really careful with your team when you get to the halfway point, that you don't overdo it with your guys. Given the injuries and what you've been through so far this season, how have you adapted with this team this year?
Well, we're pretty consistent how we do things because we're less experienced this year than we've been in a long time. Sometimes you have to do things maybe a touch longer or a little more remedial or slow it down so that can add. But I think you have to taper down and, you know, mental and physical freshness is important. And again, it's that same balance I was just talking about, but doing the work and being prepared. And so, you know, that's just been our formula. Everyone has different formulas for success, but tapering down as the season goes on and reading your team. You know, I've got one of the best strength and conditioning coaches in the country in Mike Curtis. And I think sports science has gone this way with some of the metrics where you can read, okay, what's their, how much load, where are they at? And, you know, some of it's just a good old feel. Sometimes they need to work. And then sometimes you have some data that says, hey, some guys, you look at where they're at, and sometimes, you know, shorter but more intense time-wise is better or lighter, and you try to mix all that together.
I did want to ask you about your team's playing personality. And you mentioned sometimes it's a struggle to score the ball, things of that nature. But the one thing I keep coming back to is the value of the experience. You've got guys who went through last year, and now as you go to the second half of the season, that experience, and you mentioned, you know, load management, things like that. I would just think the mental confidence that some of those guys work with, even though it's a different team, has got to be something that's in your favor as well.
Well, there's no substitute for experience. And we have, you know, two players, you know, Kihei Clark, who started and played a lot, and Mamadi, who played a good amount. And then Braxton Key played, you know, I think he averaged around 20 minutes a game. So those three guys are experienced, and they have to obviously use that experience. After that, we're all pretty much new guys that didn't really play at all. Jay Huff maybe next. He was spot minutes. So you rely on those three, and they've been through the battles at a high level. And I think the good teams are the experienced teams. You're seeing that with the Louisvilles and some of the teams. And college basketball is a little different this year. Our league is, but you have to lean on that for sure. And they have to lead well, and we've got to prepare well. So I've always said that, and the way we build our program and most teams is, you know, try to get guys in their upperclassmen years or just with a ton of experience. So that will prove valuable as the season winds down.
Coach, we had fun with you in the preseason about the unknown of this league, given the fact that, you know, no first or second team player in the league's right. coming back. Now that we're at the halfway point, if I asked you the same question, how would you describe the Atlantic Coast Conference from top to bottom in one word? What would your answer be?
Same word, unknown.
Yeah. You're consistent.
Right. I mean, one word, yeah. I think it is. But in more than one word, you just, who's ever right that night. You know, we have not played Louisville or Duke. There's a couple teams, but it just seems like who's ever right in that game was playing their best has a chance. Again, that's excluding the teams we've played, and that doesn't matter where you're positioned. And that makes for an exciting year. And I know everybody said, well, last year we had three number one seeds, and it's not, well, this ACC may be down. Yeah, in some ways, but if you look at the rankings, you got three teams in the top ten. I don't know what they come out today. And a lot of leagues don't have that. And I know they'll say, well, but what about the rest of the league? This is all over college basketball. You know, some people are jumping on the ACC. And, you know, I think it competes with all the other leagues. And then the top of our league is showing it's up there. So it's just the way college basketball appears this year because of the departures. But there are still some high-quality teams. And anybody's capable on any given night. So I would say that. And how's that for one word for you guys? You like that?
That was outstanding. Concise and to the point. You're all over.
Absolutely. I got to cover for you guys, you know?
That's exactly what you have to do. I would agree with that. The other thing I'm going to ask you is that when we talked to Jim Christian yesterday, and I haven't seen you on the road this year, but one of the things is, and he's not the only one, and I'm going to imagine you subscribe to this somewhat, but that this league is better top to bottom, even though it doesn't have the inventory maybe that it has nationally from years gone by. But the improvement of the teams who might have been at the bottom last year now is causing that word that Packer has perfected is glob in the middle. You buy that?
Well said, for sure. No, I think the bottom has come up, and you know, maybe the top isn't as elite, although how do you know? I mean, obviously with three number one seeds, but for sure, that's real. And that's, our season so far, we've been in every game, road or home, and we haven't been able to finish some off. But they've been there. And again, I don't wonder what the point difference is or games throughout the league, but it's tight. And that's, because the bottom is better. And, you know, I think some of the middle are for sure.
All right, Coach. Thanks for the time as always. Good luck this week against Clemson and then obviously coming up over the weekend against Louisville.
Thanks, guys. Good to be with you.
All right, Tony Bennett with us. Always fun to visit with him. And Cavaliers with an important week. Everybody's got an important week.
Now it is. I mean, from the glob down from 4 to 15, they're all big. Wes, you got to win now.
Packer and Durham.
There's Crispy. And then there's Crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
You know, we talked some hoops. We've talked some football. Softball, baseball, right around the corner. We're getting cranked up. We know lacrosse is underway. Wrestling's rocketing and rolling. But when it comes to softball, Wes, we have a new team in the league. How about that?
And not an expansion.
No. We didn't bring somebody in. No, but we have a new team, and Dan Radakovich and folks down in Tiger Town have decided that women's softball is something that they should be a part of, and they have made a ridiculous investment. The new stadium is unbelievable. I was kidding around about hitting golf balls on that piece of property 400 years ago. Backs right up to Doug Kingsmore Stadium, which is beautiful. So Clemson softball now becomes a real thing.
Well, and John Rittman was hired November of 2017. Now, that seems like a while ago. So in 2 years, he has essentially developed Clemson softball. And John Rittman joins us live from Clemson today. First of all, Coach, we visited with you on radio about a year or so ago. We enjoyed that visit, and it seemed like it was a long ways off. And, well, here we are. You're getting ready to go play for real, and this has got to be an exciting time for you.
Yeah, you know, time has just flown by the last 2 years, and to come to this moment and kind of be a part of history at Clemson University with the first softball program and first game is a dream come true. And everybody associated with the program is really just pumped to get the season going.
What what have you learned in doing this? Because all your unbelievable experience in your coaching career, whether it be Stanford, the national team, all those things, but you had to learn a lot of things in this process that were first time for even someone of your experience.
Yeah, you know, first, I think you have to have patience when you're hired 2 years in advance and you're in charge of putting together a staff and recruiting and then building the stadium. So I've learned a lot about construction, I'll tell you that, meeting with the architects and the builders. You know, we've had a lot of meetings leading up to the completion of the stadium, and now that we're in the stadium, we're trying to work out the kinks a little bit, but really just our main focus is concentrating on our team and getting them ready to play. And I think that's probably been the most challenging at times because we are so young and the roster really wasn't complete until the beginning of this year.
Coach, I was kidding around with Wes that that piece of property 400 years ago when I was in school, I'd be out there hitting wedges and seven irons. I hope you got those divots cleaned up down the third base line. I don't want anybody getting injured because there was some pure shots back there 100 years ago. But the place looks great. I drove down there not too long ago, and it was just amazing what's been built. Unbelievable.
Yeah, we're very blessed. It's a great piece of land to build the stadium on. It sets between the football complex and the baseball stadium, Doug Kinsmore Stadium, and so we're very centrally located, but we had to give up a few motorhome spots, so we've kind of been diplomats with the motorhome parkers during the football season, but now that everybody has seen this beautiful stadium take place and come to reality, I think everybody's very proud of it, and the support has definitely shown that.
All right, Coach, I want to go back to kind of birthing this program a little bit, if you will. Okay. At some point, you're selling hope here, right? When you go on the road in the spring of 2018, are you talking to players who will be sophomores this year? I mean, you had to go look at putting together, you can't field a team of entirely freshmen. I mean, you had to find some people either willing to transfer or understand, hey, you're going to come to school and your clock is going to start type thing, right?
Yeah, you know, one of our biggest selling points was being a part of history and being a pioneer, so to speak, of being a part of a first-time program. But with that, you know, softball recruiting a couple of years ago was to the point where we were verbally committing 8th, 9th, and 10th graders. So there was a lot of recruits that were already verbally committed when we started the program here. So we really literally had to go out and turn over rocks and talk to people about kids that maybe somebody else had overlooked. But anytime you have an opportunity to sell a university like Clemson to a family and to a possible recruit, you know, that's a bonus. But like I mentioned earlier, our biggest thing was, hey, you have an opportunity to be a part of something new and be a part of history. Certainly we had to show a lot of pictures and we had to kind of sell our vision. But I think it's worked out pretty well for us, getting ready to start our inaugural season.
With your incredible experience, have you been able to reach out to either other folks in the same similar position who have started a program from scratch? I mean, who did you lean on a little bit in this process, I guess, in the world of collegiate softball?
Well, you know, I was fortunate enough back in 1992 to help Teresa Wilson, who I worked for at two different universities, University of Oregon and then in Minnesota. We had the opportunity to start the program at the University of Washington back in 92. Certainly times are different now. Recruiting's different. Athletic department budgets are different. So I had a little bit of experience to draw on from that. But certainly, you know, there's no blueprint. You know, there's nobody says, okay, here, follow these instructions. This is how you do it. You know, so I think we really literally took it one step at a time and we weren't in a hurry. You know, Dan Radakovich had this great vision of starting softball and they hired us with plenty of time to put input on the stadium and input in who we hired as our staff and who we recruited. So we had plenty of time. So we took a lot of time with the thought process of how we're going to do this, you know, in hiring associate head coach Kyle Jameson and our other staff assistant Courtney Brielle and our director of ops Jeannie Murphy, you know, we all played an integral part in really building this program. And we got a lot of input from each other and certainly used our connections and network to kind of pick the brains of other people in regards to recruiting and what exactly we wanted in the stadium. So like I said, there wasn't an exact blueprint, and certainly we probably didn't do everything perfectly. But we are here today, and we have a very competitive team put together and getting ready to start this season.
Coach, I know how much Clemson fans love their baseball. I would just assume that you've got the same kind of enthusiasm now for year one of this softball program.
You know, the first day I got hired here, and I went into the press conference, and it was standing room only, and I envisioned kind of before I went in, there'd be a couple of cameras and a few people. So I was shocked to walk into a completely filled room. And so I knew this place was special, and everybody had told me Clemson has the best fans in the country. And then this year when we opened up the tickets and then a week later, pretty much sold all the tickets, you know, I really knew that this program and the fans, you know, were going to support it, that we're just so fortunate to be here. And we tell our players all the time, you know, this isn't the norm, you know, especially our freshmen, that, you know, we got to work for everything we get. Although we have a great fan base right now. And like I said, our season tickets are pretty much sold out. So, just very blessed and fortunate.
How would you define a successful season in year one?
Well, you know, I think the biggest thing is really not to look at wins and losses. And I know that's hard to do as coaches. It's hard to do as players, you know, because our obvious objective every game is to win, you know. But I think if we look at the big picture is we are laying a foundation, and we really got to concentrate on the process of making sure we're doing our day-to-day process with living by our core values and making sure that this foundation is strong for years to come. And I think that's what we're kind of, you know, holding our hat on right now. And I think our players have bought into our values and they bought into this team atmosphere. And most importantly, they bought into being a part of history. And we're going to take this. I hate to use the cliche, but we're going to take it one day at a time and we'll adjust and adapt as necessary through the season.
You know what? I think the one day at a time might be pretty appropriate for all the things you've done the last couple of years and getting underway this year. We wish you safe travels to Orlando. I know a week from tomorrow is the doubleheader with Western Carolina at the Clemson Softball Stadium. We look forward to following your progress and appreciate your time here.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me. And if you're ever in the area, come on down. We'll hit a few golf balls in the parking lot.
Oh, I like the way you're thinking.
There you go. Thanks, Coach. John Rittman will debut Clemson softball this weekend at a tournament in Orlando, and they play at home a week from Wednesday. That'll be fun to watch.
Yes, I thought he was going to say, come on down, and we'll go hit a couple at the Esso Club. But no, he wants to hit golf balls. But nevertheless, I'm going to tell you right now, they will be fired up to watch that.
All right.
Because they love their baseball.
Oh, yeah. No question. I think that'll be good. Yep. I think it'll be very successful.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.